From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Here's the thing. People define power in all sorts of ways. For some, money is power. For others, influence. Like while we're recording remotely during the pandemic, you've probably, from Noel and Matt and myself, heard noise in the background that we could not control. I've got some people building a staircase behind my place right now, and having watched the staircase being built from scratch is fun, but it is loud. So if you hear any banging, everything's okay. They're just trying to build a staircase, and we don't have the power to stop them yet.
I choose to interpret building a staircase as a metaphor of some kind, like, you know, attaining transcendence. You know, we're building a staircase to heaven, like in that Led Zeppelin song.
You know what a staircase is really providing you guys? Access.
Yes. Yeah. For many people, power takes the form of access. There's an excellent Reddit thread you can read if you're familiar with Reddit, where someone breaks down the difference in a day-to-day life of a billionaire versus a multimillionaire. And after a certain point, it entirely comes down to access. You can just, like, if you are, you know, the extreme version would be Jeff Bezos level, and you want to talk to Bill Gates, you can just tell someone you want to talk to Bill Gates, and then you'll have Bill on the phone. You're both billionaires. You have that access. But regardless of how you define power, society is, to a large degree, going to be defined by who has access to what. And it doesn't matter whether we're talking resources, social contracts, or just where you can physically go. I was thinking about, you know, most people's, I feel like it's safe to assume most people's first experience with the idea of a restricted area, the one you personally remember on a microcosmic level, is going to be something like this. Do you guys have a distant memory of childhood when you were maybe in a place of business and you saw a door that just said private or employees only?
I remember a door that said pirate.
What was, that was behind that door? Yeah. For me, it was always at the bookstore or like the video store. There was always this one like beaded curtain in the back that said no one under 21 allowed. And I was like, what's behind there? I eventually found out, you know, but then the internet came along and it was rendered kind of irrelevant. But it was definitely a thing that occurred to my childhood brain.
Oh, you know what? My grandmother, what's weird that you say this, and I never, this man, I'm having like flashback. My grandmother had a room in her condo that I was not allowed to go into.
Ooh,
it had a big lock on it.
A Bluebeard situation. Is this a true story?
No.
Oh man. Well, well, we'll cut the part where you say
why
no.
Why are you toying with our emotions like this, Matt?
So it is true, though. I think for many people listening to the show today, you have inevitably run into some barrier, whether social or physical, something that you could not breach, unless, of course, you are an immensely powerful person and you see us. There are people in the world, it's true, who can be walking into a business, see a sign that says employees only, and then just buy the business. And then say, well, now I'm kind of an employee. Let me in.
It's but just to open that door.
Yeah, but those people are very rare compared to the rest of the population. And the idea of exclusion goes much, much further than that. The truth is this. Whether you are a president or a peasant, an upstanding citizen, a hardened criminal, or even a billionaire in some cases, there are multiple places on this planet that you will, for one reason or another, simply never be allowed to visit. And should you dare to break these taboos, there will be consequences, up to and including, in some cases, death. That's the subject of our episode today, the world's strangest restricted areas. Here are the facts. I could not be snarky in the notes. I love the title of this. There should be a Dr. Seuss book named Oh, the Places You Can't Go.
I would buy that.
Let's give those high school graduates some like realistic expectations. Give them both books.
And you just list out all of the military bases for every country, unless you are a member of that military or some kind of extreme diplomat.
Extreme diplomacy. Is that like an X Games type situation?
Oh, yeah.
It is. It is. It's the UN, but with arm wrestling and I think a little MMA. But here's the thing. Over the centuries, especially in the recent era, human beings have been banned from visiting certain regions or sites across the planet. Before we get into the very weird stuff, and there is a plethora of very weird stuff, it is important to note that often the reasons for these bans aren't sinister or nefarious or conspiratorial. They're actually for pretty wholesome reasons.
Yeah, at least according to the official story, right?
There it is.
So an example is, immediately I see this and I think of sparkling water. It's not LaCroix Cave. It's Lascaux Cave, I believe.
Seems like Lascaux Cave.
Yeah, Lascaux Cave. That's in France. And it has been closed to the general public since 1963. But it's not to hide some kind of, you know, clandestine, super secret military government operation. Instead, what it's meant to do is protect and preserve cave paintings that are found inside of this cave, which are over 17,000 years old. Preserving that history is probably not too much of a stretch for most of us to be okay with, I would say.
Yeah, unless some of those cave paintings are of, you know, the ancestors that came from Mars a million years ago BC that were contacted by the CIA. Okay.
In paint that's composed of elements that don't exist on the periodic table.
Or mystical runes of some sort, maybe a different era, but there are possibilities of nefarious cover-ups here. But I think for the most part, this one seems on the up and up.
Yeah, there are many places like this. You know, there are sites of ancient human habitation or activity. And knowing what we know about modern humans, allowing tourists to those sites will inevitably result in their degradation, either through like looting or someone writing, you know, Tommy T-Bone was here in some ancient Göbekli Tepe kind of place, or it'll just be the consequence of completely well-intentioned people like who want to touch stuff and put their nasty human oils and excretions on things. That's why you can't just rub every painting in the museum.
They really tend to frown upon that. The docents, is that what they're called? Basically, like, docents are like museum bouncers. You know, they have to have a certain gravitas to fill that role. Otherwise, you just walk all over them, right?
I love museums. It's one of the only things I miss from before the pandemic. Like, and it's always fun when you're in a museum because some of the most well-dressed people are the volunteers who are there to make sure you're not just like, good, having a synesthesia moment, rubbing these paintings. And it's... I think you can tell I've been kicked out of some museums, but as long as
they're not metal paints, we're okay.
Right, right. You're right, Matt. But it seems like a good job, doesn't it? I don't know if you get paid or if everybody's volunteer, but you go from 4 to 8 hours or so and you just hang out with some of the most meaningful art in the world.
And just all you got to do is watch some people and just check for sketch. That's all.
Check for sketch. I love it.
You know, there's a museum. Let's say this. There's a museum-like place that is completely off limits that exists way out in the middle of nowhere in Svalbard. It's a museum-like place. And I only say that because, no, it's actually not museum-like. It's really just a storage facility that's super cool.
Yeah, and it's definitely not public storage. It's storage for the public of the future, which we are not. That is why we cannot visit the Doomsday Vault in Svalbard. You've heard of it before, especially if you listen to this show. It's the repository for thousands and thousands of seeds. It's a flora version of Noah's Ark, essentially.
And this is the one that inspired the Nabisco or whatever company to make a Oreo vault nearby.
Yes, that's correct. And hopefully more people will get on board with this kind of preservation. The idea is solid. You say, what if things get even worse than they are now? What if some crops or some plants are completely eradicated? This is our way to bring them back. It's a brilliant idea, and it makes sense that not everybody can visit. It's you're not absolutely banned. There are ways to get in, but you have to have a compelling reason, and you need to have expertise or be the people who make sure that the storage is working, that the climate controls are working.
Or be with the AP, the Associated Press or something, and you're specifically doing an article on it. Sometimes I've seen they'll let people in.
Yeah, press pass, documentary or something. But then there's another wholesome, somewhat wholesome example would be Surtsey Island, which is also far north. It's in Iceland. This is interesting. A lot of people forget this. Earth is a living thing, right? And it's going through its David Bowie-esque changes all the time, and they don't always make the news. Surtsey Island is one of the newest islands on the planet. People watched this island just, happen from 1963, 1967. A series of volcanic eruptions turned ocean into land.
And how cool is that? That means that this place, if you don't immediately ruin it with Oreo container wrappers from the nearby vault.
And people who show up to the island just rubbing stuff. That's how I picture people now after researching this.
But yeah, if you can prevent this new island from being touched a lot, touched copiously by people, then you could observe how life begins in a way, how life is transferred through the air and through the water to a completely remote place, and then just watch it essentially evolve, have a micro evolution. I don't know what you would call it, but you can look at it almost like the Galapagos Islands beginning or something. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool. So it's shut off from the world so that a select few scientists, just like the vault, can go there and perform experiments, keep track of everything that's happening and how things are changing on the island.
Yeah, they want to see especially how this is unique because scientists were able to prevent the public from ever going onto this land. So they're primarily focusing on watching how life arrives at this island and how it colonizes this island. And, you make a fantastic point, Matt. If they can keep this situation going for long enough, then they may begin to see different types of speciation that are driven by the constraints of living on this island that has, that's a new idea functionally.
It really is. And one of the coolest things just in reading about the island are the number of birds that end up there, the number of species of birds that end up there, and like salamanders and other amphibians, and just really interesting. It's like cool.
How they get there.
Yeah, like life just shows up, man.
I know. It is amazing considering like the arduous journey they take. This is an island and these birds, it starts with like mold and bacteria and fungi. And then all of a sudden there are plants and there are all these birds. It's awesome if you're a bird. There are no predators in this new land for now. And I'm still baffled by how things that are not, sea or flight worthy end up there. It's pretty fascinating.
Sounds like I'd have a lovely time on this island.
I think you would hate it.
Commingling with my bird brethren.
Your birdren.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So that's an example. And those are, so far, we've described three scientific endeavors. But there's another realm that's a little more pop culture when it comes to restricted areas, and that is corporate secrecy. Of course, there are plenty of corporate sites that restrict entry. You might work in a place that has, a storage unit or a server room or something like that that you're not allowed to go into because you're not the IT person. That makes sense.
Totally. I happened to, for a work-related thing a couple of years ago, end up at, I think it was A&W, or it was some like soda company that also makes like Gatorade type drinks. And in their corporate offices, which is in like Dallas, Texas, they had a pretty serious security protocol just to get into where the meeting rooms are, because also back there are the flavor labs where they're making all this like very like top secret intellectual property, which at the end of the day, that's what these recipes are, right?
Yep. And that's where it goes. That's where we arrive at one of the most famous local examples of corporate restricted areas, which I think is pretty funny. It's the Coca-Cola company. They're so extra. They keep their top secret recipe in a literal vault. And there's also, you know, the longstanding story that there are only three people who know the full recipe at any given time. They're not allowed on a plane together. The vault is definitely true. Since 2011, it's been in an Atlanta museum, the Coca-Cola Museum, and people can visit the museum every day. It's great if you love propaganda, which I do. And the thing is, almost no one gets to go inside that vault. So that's another good reason, you know, like A&W, they're restricting access to their moneymaker. That makes sense. Yeah.
Do you think that the thing that's in the vault is like a handwritten, like yellowed piece of paper that was originally written on by Mr. Coca-Cola himself, whomever that is?
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was really hoping that was the case. I am not one of the people who can get into the vault, but I do like to imagine it looks, I don't want it to be just a sheet of paper, though that's funny. I would like it to be like Indiana Jones's dad's Grail diary.
Yes.
But it's all about soda, and I want it to be really weird and conspiratorial. Like it's based on a grimoire. I want a soda grimoire. That's what I want to be in that vault.
Whoa.
So Coke, if you're listening.
So think about all the places in the world where Coca-Cola Classic is actually produced. It's produced in numerous factories, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're someone who works in that factory at the level of running the factory, maybe in the money of the factory, you could see what ingredients are being ordered to produce Coca-Cola Classic, right?
Well, but isn't it like a concentrate that comes, you know, like the syrup or whatever? They don't. I
don't know.
Wonder.
I don't know how they work there at Big Coca-Cola.
but here's the thing with this. This is just a side note. In 2011, it appeared that the recipe may have been leaked, but not by a contemporary person, not like by a factory worker or not by, you know, a chemist. It was found in this old leather notebook that belonged to Pemberton's best friend, another guy, chemist living in Atlanta named R.R. Evans. No relation to Robert, I assume. The notebook was handed down from generations to generations, and it has a recipe that includes an extract of coca leaves, caffeine, lots of sugar, lime juice, vanilla, caramel, and then a couple of other flavorings that are surprising, but they might, you know, they might Voltron up into soda.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
It's weird, but it's no confirmation from the idea of, no confirmation that is the secret recipe. And also there's some marketing in there, clearly, because that recipe has changed over time. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it doesn't have some of the old ingredients, right? But those things, the corporate secrecy is relatively new. The most, historically speaking, the oldest existing restricted sites tend to be holy sites, by which we mean only certain groups are allowed in there due to their perceived religious significance.
Yes, and one of these examples is in Japan. It's called the Issei Grand Shrine, and only members of the Japanese royal family are allowed to enter. It's really interesting that it goes through cycles of continual reconstruction at steady increments. It's a really interesting place. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's the most sacred Shinto shrine in the country. It dates back to the 3rd century. The legend is that it's home to this sacred mirror that was given to the first emperor of Japan by an actual deity, by the sun goddess. So it's strange because you can enter it if you're one of the people rebuilding the shrine, or if you're a member of the Japanese royal family. So start evaluating your marriage prospects. Good luck. Or get really, really good at carpentry and fluent in Japanese. And you know what? Be Japanese. That is your best chance. Yeah, that's your baseline. But that's, you know, that's also a part of a spiritual value system. So mm-hmm. who are you as someone outside of that value system to say, you know, I should be the exception? This is where we run into probably the most famous example of a restricted area due to religion, and that is Mecca. Mecca bars entry to any people who are not of the Muslim faith. And it's an enormously controversial, sticky situation because there are some people who, for one reason or another, have taken that as a challenge, right? And yeah. said, I am going to, you know, try to fake convert to Islam, which seems pretty disrespectful, or I am going to, you know, pretend to be someone I am not and get into Mecca, and then I'm going to take pictures of Mecca and release these pictures to the wild. That's pretty dangerous to mess
with. Yeah, it is. I understand, though, the kind of human nature impulse that maybe the moment you tell somebody they can't do something, that's the moment they decide they want to do that thing. When before they may have even never crossed their radar. But I would argue that those people that are trying to infiltrate the sacred space should probably not do that and are probably have some issues they need to contend with otherwise.
Now, I think I would agree with you guys. But what if we weren't talking about Mecca? What if we were talking about the Vatican archives? Because I kind of want people to get in there and like snoop around a little bit. No, I'm sorry. Don't do that. You can.
Their reading system is really weird. We talked about that, right?
We did. But I'm not talking about the place where you can go and read stuff. I mean, like really looking around, you know?
You want a free roam. No, they're not going to let you do an open world sandbox vibe there. You have to know exactly what you're asking for. You have to know that it already exists and you kind of have to know where it is.
All you have to do is become, you know, a Vatican banker and or Pope. So yeah. You should be good. I mean, somebody could do it.
Just be the Pope. Start out being the Pope. So the baseline for that is right now you have to be a dude. So they're just like being a member of the royal family of Japan. There are restrictions, and it could be argued very easily that these sites are practicing discrimination, right? Whether or not you can visit these sites is dependent upon your social standing or your involvement in a belief system. But most of the rest of the world seems able to accept this situation. It's an easy thing to accept, I think, for a lot of people. You'd say, why go out of your way to disrespect someone else's belief system for no other reason than what you want to run up and just like start touching stuff? Again, I'm keeping this idea. Keeping the idea of tourists just like licking their palms and rubbing ancient sculptures.
I just want to find out what's inside the Vatican archives. Come on. That's all. That's all.
I feel like you're going to rub the books.
I look, if I needed to, actually, no, you know, I wouldn't, because I'd be in there, sneaky spy style. I would have gloves on to, you know, protect my identity.
Isn't there a movie with this as the plot?
So many, I'm sure. there's a whole genre, right? I would imagine. Yeah. Isn't Da Vinci Code?
Right. That's the genre. Yeah,
it's Vatican Treasure starring old Nick Cage.
Nick Cage, but that was about stealing the Constitution, right? Which is another thing you probably shouldn't rub.
Yeah, rub a copy. So, also, last note on the Vatican, man, those books must smell amazing. You guys like the smell of old books?
I very much do. I'm surprised that doesn't exist as a car air freshener.
Oh, wow. That is a fantastic idea.
Shh, cut that part out. Reminds me of Spencer when we were on Harmontown. Cut that part out. No, stop the podcast. Stop the podcast.
So, yes, it is true. There are places like that. And if you, whether or not you follow that religion or, you know, insert belief system here, just as, you know, a matter of respect for your fellow human beings, you don't have to be a jerk about it. Don't have to be like, well, I'm not Muslim, but I am an architecture expert, so I should get to go. No, buddy, no, be cool. There's a similar thing with wildlife protection. This is something that has become increasingly common in the modern era. There are multiple regions of Earth that are considered legally protected specifically to give wildlife refuge from hunters and from the spread of human civilization. Places like Mare Mona in the Cook Islands. It's one of the world's largest protected marine areas in terms of just area, just the measurements. It's bigger than Mexico. It's a big deal, and good on the Cook Islands for doing it. But believe it or not, even the idea of let's give animals a place to live, even that idea can be controversial because doing so can restrict the activities of businesses, things like commercial fishing, mining, oil drilling, or other forms of resource extraction. Who are these fish to stand in the way of progress? Some would argue. But again, they're not always big swaths of oceans. A lot of them are closer to home, these wildlife protection sites or these places you can't enter to protect wildlife. One of them is a place that our crew got very close to a number of years ago, North Brother Island. Spoiler, we didn't make it.
Yes, not North Sentinel Island.
No.
And not that creepy building in the middle of New York City in Manhattan. What was that one called?
I think it's called the Oldest House.
Oh, that's it. That's what it is. The Oldest House there in Manhattan. I highly recommend checking it out. Be careful if you do enter because it seems to shift a little bit while you're inside and the whole no windows thing. But you'll be fine. Just got to find some of those objects that are there. They don't call them haunted. What do they call them in there? Objects of power? I can't remember.
Yeah.
You'll find out. Just go if you can. But no, North Brother Island is an actual place. It's an actual island. It's up there right near the Bronx. There's North Brother Island and South Brother Island. And North Brother Island is a no-go. Not allowed.
Now, North Brother Island used to be, once upon a time, tremendously important to the city of New York. It was a former quarantine hospital for treatable diseases.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And Ben, you mentioned off air a little trip that you and I took along with Matt and Lauren Vogelbaum, where we were barred from going to check the spot out because of like a music video shoot of some kind.
We were going to Roosevelt Island to find a very similar abandoned structure. And we walked a pretty long way to the south end of the island only to find that Kanye West had decided to have an impromptu fashion show there.
Oh, that's what it was, a fashion show.
So our access was restricted.
Because of his power. He's got all that power.
So much power.
But hey, this is something you might like, Noel. On North Brother Island, do you know what it is right now?
No.
It's a bird sanctuary.
Ooh. What is up with all the secret bird sanctuaries?
Well, it's a good official reason.
I guess that's true. And look, birds should live. I get it. I'm not anti-bird to that level. I just don't know that I would want to spend time on a place where they were just running around willy-nilly, because that's what they do.
Yeah, and, you know, city birds are like city people. They can be surprisingly aggro sometimes. You know what I mean? Those are some tough pigeons and seagulls. They did not come to play with us. But yeah, those wildlife refuges, they're a huge thing. And this is interesting because for some of the more conspiratorially minded, some of these innocuous explanations, bird sanctuary, et cetera, they might be cover for less wholesome activities. But in general, what we've just described are examples of good reasons you can't go to certain places. And in each of the cases named above, you can see video footage of these places. Journalists have been in there. Filmmakers have been into, you know, the vaults, the caves, the islands, you name it. The thing is, there are other less wholesome, restricted areas, and probably more than you might imagine. What are we talking about? We'll tell you after a word from our sponsor. Here's where it gets crazy. Quick recap. We love this topic. We've talked about this in the past. Places like the former HAARP facilities, right? Where they're officially experimenting with the ionosphere up there in Alaska.
Is that the high altitude oral research facility with a PH? No,
it's Hank Aaron's actual real patio. there were a lot of counterfeit patios.
Really quickly, I just noticed something that's never occurred to me before. HAARP is just AARP with an H at the beginning.
Oh.
Okay, so it's the Holy American Association of Retired Persons?
Yes. There are many directions that this rabbit hole could take us, but surely it's not a coincidence, or it maybe absolutely totally is.
I was talking to some professor a while back who said something that really stuck with me. And I won't give his name out, but we're talking about geopolitics and timing of things, domestic events that occur. And he said, I always start off with the assumption that coincidence in this sphere does not exist. And all I ask is that someone prove me wrong. Mm. And he's like, and I've built my career on that.
Wow. Well, hey, I'll prove myself wrong. You ready, guys? HAARP actually stands for High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. And I knew that, and I got it wrong, of course.
Wow, that is so incredibly disrespectful to Hank Aaron's patio. He's a sports legend. And
real patio.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we phoned that one in a little bit. But you're right. The thing about that kind of experimental facility is that due to the nature of its secrecy, people spread all sorts of rumors about what it's actually doing. And that also happens with things we've covered in the past, like closed cities in Russia and Asia, and for a time in Tennessee. But then there's also another thing, an existential crisis that we talked about, like isolated communities that risk extinction. They're exposed to the modern world, like North Sentinel Island. I think that's one that still captivates everybody because no one really knows what the population is up to, you know, or what their day-to-day lives or their beliefs are like. But
yeah, well, for sure, they're not thinking about us.
Well, they are. They're thinking they do not want us around. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I think more so it's like, hey, here's our life. This is what we're doing. Sure, you guys stay over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And they occupy a really interesting space that we'll touch on later in this episode. The thing is, we've done episodes on all those. And of course, the DMZ, which we could talk about all day, also a bird sanctuary, by the way, Noel. But there are, yeah, sorry, man. But that it's an accidental bird sanctuary. Mm. Just because they're less likely to hit all the landmines and humans aren't chasing them. But it's true. But the thing is, there are many, many, many more restricted areas and types of restricted areas, and they can get very strange. You'll often hear that places are restricted for your safety. Like North Brother Island, one of the reasons people are not allowed to just visit it willy-nilly is that there are concerns that exploring the structures there would be unsafe. You know, like the floor might collapse, something might fall on you. Or in the case of Brazil's Ilha de Queimada Grande, you might be bitten by snakes. As a matter of fact, you are statistically certain to be bitten by snakes unless you are straight up wearing armor when you go on this tiny island. This is the stuff of nightmares for a lot of people. You walk 10 feet, you are guaranteed to run into anywhere between, well, if you just stand, then there will be anywhere between 1 to 5 snakes in an immediate 10 square foot area of you.
No.
Yeah, well, some people want to get there.
Matt, do you feel so strongly about this?
I mean, they're like super venomous snakes. I think they've got some of the most venomous snakes in the world on that island.
Golden lanceheads.
Yes. Yeah,
their bite will literally disintegrate human flesh.
Nope.
See, but it's the psychological urge, Matt. Some people hear that and they say, well, I want to go. And they're not even herpetologists, which are scientists that study snakes. They're just people who are like, I can do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think this is what we need to do, guys. We need to have a reverse psychology campaign where it's a tourism campaign. Come to Snake Island. We dare you. And then anybody who will do it, just weed them out, guys. Cull the herd. Sorry.
Oh, man.
I mean, I'm just joking.
You know, you are truly a monster, Matt.
We got a big herd, though. I see your point. But there are also other sites that are restricted ostensibly for safety. Nuclear disaster sites, military exclusion zones, and then areas of the world vaguely classified as no-go areas.
Right. For example, Fukushima is the site we probably most recently associate with the nuclear disaster area. And it makes perfect sense. You don't want to go there. Definitely hashtag too soon. Visitors who spend too much time there can definitely be exposed to damaging amounts of radiation. Over time, some of these sites are reopened to the public. In fact, Ben, some of these become nature preserves as well, if I'm not mistaken. For example, there's a lot of photos of the Chernobyl site to this day. And I believe it's maybe it's not an official wildlife reserve, but isn't it a pretty thriving, kind of rich, wildlife rich area?
It's certainly been reclaimed.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, guys, because there's this ongoing debate in Chernobyl specifically about to what extent flora and fauna were affected by the contamination. And there are two big reasons that this happens. First, it gives scientists the ability to study the long tail effects of contamination on living organisms so they can see rates of mutation. As comic book as it sounds, that really is true. And then, just to your point, just like the DMZ, because there are fewer human beings running around, the populations of large mammals are increasing. So, yeah, it naturally becomes a wildlife preserve. Like in the case of the DMZ, one of the big rumors, legends, the thing that we all kind of Fox Mulder want to believe is the idea that there may be large apex predator felines there. Tigers. Unproven. And probably, honestly, they're probably not at the DMZ just because that area of the world is so heavily surveilled. But I want it to be true.
Imagine tiger bears emerging from Chernobyl.
How cool would that be, right? All the strength of a bear and the cunning of a tiger. I don't know. I say that like tigers couldn't also clearly whip the snot out of 99.9% of human beings, one-to-one unarmed PvP. But the other thing we should say is that, you know, like you said, Noel, over time, these sites do become less contaminated. So for example, you can visit parts of Fukushima. The Fukushima exclusion zone is not the entirety of Fukushima, and residents who had to evacuate due to the nuclear disaster, many of them have been able to return to their homes. So though nuclear disaster sites are legit and they do slowly reopen at time, in a lot of cases, they're not necessarily hiding anything. After the original disaster hits and the inevitable cover-up fails, which they always do, then the world is aware of these and experts visit, you know, to measure radiation, to see the long-term effects of contamination on the ecosystem. Why can't people go there? You know, free world, right? If I want to go risk contamination to see a tiger bear, that's my life to live, big government. But the main issue really is kind of boring. It's liability. Imagine if you're Ukraine and you're just allowing anybody to visit Chernobyl, even though it's not safe, before the radiation has begun to dissipate or diminish. People are going to start coming to you and saying, hey, I got cancer from hanging out at Chernobyl and you let me.
Oh yeah, you could totally see something like that happening. It would make sense.
So another entry in this kind of category of forbidden places would be military exclusion zones, Ben, which you mentioned a little while ago. this again makes sense. There's a lot of dangerous things that civilians would not want to be exposed to, but also secrets. And so there are quite a lot of these military restricted zones throughout the world. Some are temporary, and some are quite disturbingly permanent. Military installations, you got to have lots of clearances. You know the drill. If you've ever been to a military base, even, it's like visiting like a Hollywood movie studio. You have to check in with the guy at the little turnstile, and you have to be on a list of some kind. You have to show identification and be cleared and have like a contact that you're visiting, and then they'll let you through. But you have to go to the specific place that you're going. It's not like you can just like roam around free. So, you know, a lot of these facilities have attracted lots of interest and speculation, like, for example, places like Area 51, which, as we know, there was a big kind of mass visitation of Area 51 recently that I think ended up being a little more underwhelming than what the press would have had us believe. Isn't that right, Ben? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's where you saw people doing the very specific running meme with their arms back.
The Naruto run.
Yeah, the Naruto run. That became kind of a shared online meme / stunt. I don't remember how many people did actually show up to Groom Lake or Area 51 on that particular day, but they were very ill-informed in doing so. The government is legally allowed to murder you. If you go past the signs, they will give you a warning. But if you keep going, they can shoot you. I think there were more, I'd want to look at the numbers, but I think there were more people at the newest meme gathering, which was the now infamous Battle of the Joshes. You guys heard about that?
We talked about that, right? Maybe we didn't, but we've discussed it maybe off mic. But it ended up being like a pool noodle fight or something.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's those fun doodles or whatever they're called.
Who won?
Josh.
I guess some guy named Josh. which, thank you, Matt. That was such a gift, that setup. So, we have to have these exclusion zones. But then there are other places. Everything we mentioned is a place that is known. It's on a map somewhere. It is officially acknowledged and allowed to exist. But there are other places, quite a few of them, like black sites or like research stations in remote parts of the globe. These can go decades with their existence or purpose never being officially acknowledged. And the logic here is kind of sound. It's much harder to find a place if you don't know where it is, what it's built for, or whether it really exists.
Yeah. Governments generally try and keep their torture dungeons off limits to people or hidden. Which is what we know black sites can be used for. Not always.
Sure. But you're right. You're right. They are black sites or black boxes, in terms of information. We only learn about what goes on there, what laws are being broken, when it's a little too late to save the people involved or the victims, who can be innocent, right? Then we have this other thing called no-go areas. No-go areas are going to be familiar to everyone in the audience today, because you have probably lived somewhere where there wasn't like a law that said thou shalt not, go north of the Greenwich Avenue and 52nd or whatever. I'm just making things up. I hope that's not a real neighborhood. If it is, sorry, guys. You've heard of no-go areas maybe being described as the bad part of town, the wrong side of the tracks. A no-go area is often, the most general way to describe it is a place that has restrictions, whether legal or informal, that prevent outsiders from entering, and or, fears that if you visit there and you are not welcome, you are putting your life at risk. And there's a Venn diagram here. It's pretty interesting, like North Sentinel Island is both legally a protected area and then locally acknowledged as a definite no-go. Everybody living on the islands around North Sentinel Island, they all know, and none of them want to visit. They know the score, decades, centuries before that unfortunate missionary visited on his well-intentioned but ill-informed mission.
I was just thinking about no-go zones, and you guys know I don't even know what it is. It's not a switching station. It's a huge train station area in kind of midtown, downtown Atlanta, right there by, is it DeKalb Avenue, where it's just tons and tons of railroad tracks.
Oh, yeah.
Stretching far out. I'm just thinking about how much of a no-go zone that is legally and safety-wise.
Yeah, well, you know what's interesting there, Matt? That goes into, God, I still want to do a series called Invisible America or Underground America. That goes in, there is a group of people, a migratory population, who uses those trains as their primary mode of travel. And that, they have, I've talked to some of those folks, and they have stories about how to get in and out of those places. Stuff gets dicey. Stuff gets hairy. But yeah, they are no-go zones, but I think we can get it. We cannot officially on this show say it's easier to get into those places than you think. We cannot officially say that. But I'm sure we have. I would not be surprised if we have some fellow listeners in the audience who have personal experience with this, or maybe on some freight as we speak. If that's the case, stay safe out there, folks. Don't let the bulls find you. And so you're right. Your city has a bunch of no-go areas. Your town has no-go areas. And you'll often, the thing is, in recent years, you'll hear this phrase used in a politically charged context. There were these persistent rumors and claims that the government of France had at some point quietly kind of admitted defeat in areas of some cities, and they had told law enforcement and first responders, hey, these places are now no-go zones. They are for the Muslim community only, and they function under Sharia law. Luckily, that turned out to be more fear-mongering and alarmism, Islamophobia than anything else. But it might surprise some folks in the audience to learn that these claims have been made in other countries, including the U.S. There have been, you know, somewhat hyperbolic pundits going on air and saying, like, well, this blah, blah, so-and-so's taken over. In pretty much every case, that turned out not to be true. It turned out to be greatly exaggerated, luckily. But the idea of no-go zones defined as a place where local authorities refuse to enter, that is very much true. And that occurs in places across the world, from the border, like parts of the Kenyan-Somalia border and favelas in Brazil, which are, you know, very economically deprived places where the functioning government is going to be criminal in nature. But after we've seen this panoply of real-life restricted places with a lot of truth to them, we've got to pause for a word from our sponsor and go to one last interesting thing, something with a twist. Stay tuned. And we have returned. As promised, it gets weirder. There are, apparently, some areas of the world that are restricted, not due to fears of religion, not due to fears of, you know, crime or nuclear contamination, but instead, these areas of the world are restricted due to supernatural concerns. That's right, folks. You heard us correctly. Supernatural concerns. Sounds like the opening of a horror story, but there are actually a few sites that appear to restrict access due to, get this, the presence of ghost.
Yeah. Yeah, there's this place called Bangar Fort. I think that's how you would say it. It's in India. And you can go there during regular, let's say, business hours. You can hang around. You can hang out there. But if you want to go when it's dark, you have to secure a government permit. And it's basically, I don't know, for me, it's to keep track of who's going to die tonight. I'm just joking. That's not what it is.
I love it. I love it. You waive your right to life when you sign the permit. Yeah, maybe the permit considers you legally dead. You're allowed to enter.
Well, and they have something to recover once you, you know, become non-corporeal on the site.
Yeah, it's so interesting because it is, the way it's phrased is specifically before dawn or after sundown. And you know, at first blush, this could be a policy of almost any common public park, right? A lot of parks have hours that are delineated in terms of the clock, or they just simply say, you know, the park is closed at sunset. Mm-hmm. But this place is different. It's pretty old. It was built in 1573. A famine struck in 1783. It has been uninhabited ever since. And there are a lot of local legends about the place. Some nearby villages don't even bother making rooftops.
Whoa. What?
Yeah, there's this superstition, or a common belief, we should call it, that the moment a rooftop is built on a house that's too close to the fort, the roof will inexplicably collapse. And normally this would just be a fun regional tall tale, right? Like Mothman or something. But this is ancient. It's been around for a while. And the government of India went official with its warning.
That's really intense, man.
I tell you what this reminds me of. It's something that some people know about, but it is very regional. I grew up in a town called Augusta, Georgia, and not terribly far from there, there's a place called Murphy Village, where a group of individuals live that are, they refer to themselves as Irish travelers. Not exactly sure what their exact background is, but they live in a compound, and they are sort of, they do odd jobs. They'll look like go on the road and, you know, do house painting jobs. And they're sort of a little bit notorious for being kind of hucksters and trying to put one over on people. And y'all, you see often groups of them like at the local mall or like movie theater. They have a certain look. They dress a certain way. They have very large hair, very like, seems like they're from the 80s, kind of like stuck in time, or unstuck in time rather. But you are not, outsiders are not permitted in Murphy Village. I've known some friends that tried to, you know, pop in just to take a look at the houses, and they were chased out very violently with like guns and stuff. But one thing that they do there is they build houses and they live in trailers behind them for a year or more. And they cover the windows in tinfoil. And it's meant to exorcise the evil spirits of some kind, to keep them from, you know, inhabiting the house. So they build these houses and they don't live in them for a year. They literally live in like almost like a camp type situation out back. And they have all these like special things they do, ritualistic kind of things. And then they, you know, move into the houses after this acceptable cleansing period has passed.
Interesting. Temporarily supernaturally restricted areas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, permanently restricted to us, but exactly, the houses are restricted for a time for anybody to enter.
So you could argue that what it has in common with Bangor Fort is the idea of architecturally based superstition.
But you get to have a roof.
You should get a roof. It does come with a roof.
But What I was getting at when I said the government of India went official with these warnings is that there are signposts that have explicit instructions. And if you translate from the Hindi, it says the following: entering the borders of Bangor before sunrise and after sunset is strictly prohibited. Legal action will be taken against anyone who does not follow these instructions. Wait for it. Be warned before you step in the ghost town of India. That's a little tantalizing for a official government warning. Ooh.
They know what they're doing with that warning. Now, you and me and everybody else, we have to go now.
Well, we also can consider ourselves warned. They've done their due diligence. So,
Well, also, none of us speak or read Hindi. So we can always pull the dumb tourist thing, which I am sure they love. Oh, sorry, officer. I didn't know I couldn't do that.
Nice.
Right. I think that was always a good observation. But there's another place. This isn't the only place. Over in Italy, less than half a mile from Venice, there's a island called the Poviglia Plague Island. And it also has a sinister spectral reputation. If you are a fan of the reality shows that pretend to investigate paranormal activities and ghosts, you know, the ones that take like a WWE approach to plunging the depths of the unknown, then you've probably seen something about this Plague Island. From 1793 to 1814, it was used as what's called a lazaretto, which was a plague quarantine station. This was kind of similar to North Brother Island, but what they were doing is they were taking people who were sailing in to Venice, and because of fears of the plague, they were taking them in and they were holding them in a way that's similar to the mandatory two-week quarantine that was imposed on international travelers during the heyday of COVID. It's a good idea, but we also have to consider the plague is a completely different infection in comparison to COVID. And that meant that a lot of people who showed up at this lazaretto were on their last legs. They were in late stages of the plague when they set off.
Yeah, it's estimated that 160,000 infected individuals lived out their final days and hours even there. So there's a lot of rumor that about 50% of the soil there consists of human remains. This makes me think of those leper colonies a little bit.
And, you know, over the years, there have been investigations at this and other lazarettos, places where quarantine facilities, essentially, or areas. And there were discoveries that there were mass graves in many of these areas. And this one, at least at the time of this recording where we're talking to you right now, it is yet to be fully investigated. So they haven't dug up a ton of the soil and actually done a lot of testing there to check those rumors about human remains or to find graves, mass graves, or any kind of graves. But we did, as you mentioned, Ben, paranormal shows love it. I can't remember if Ghost Adventures has been there. The one where they're like, hey, ghost! Come on, ghost!
You trying to strong arm a ghost? You gotta sweet talk those sweet babies. You can't just yell at them. That's not cool.
Hey, bro. Hey, come on, bro. What? I'm right here, bro. I'm right here.
Come at me, ghost.
What was that? What was that? Commercial.
Yeah, that was the sound of your toxic masculinity resonating through the space.
So the thing is, when it's important to note here, it is considered the, quote, most haunted site in Italy. But that's by the true believers. But when we're talking about investigations of other lazarettos, we're talking about scientific investigations. Archaeologists are excavating these sites. It's not it's not like a ghost hunter thing.
No.
But, you know, if you are the average tourist, citizen, or curious explorer, entering this island is absolutely forbidden, ghost or no. And here we draw to a close. This is just scratching the surface. Fellow conspiracy realists, each of the genre of classified area we've explored today could well be the subject of its own episode in the future. And this brings us to you. What do you think? And what are, in your opinion, some of the world's most dangerous sites? Or what are the most obscure? Are authorities correct to restrict access to these areas? And perhaps most importantly, what forbidden sites would you like to visit and why?
Yeah, particularly if you know of something local to your area that we didn't mention in this episode, we would love to hear about it and in as much detail as possible. That would be fantastic. My goodness. You can reach us on Twitter and Facebook, where we're Conspiracy Stuff, on Instagram, Conspiracy Stuff Show. You can find us on YouTube, also Conspiracy Stuff. And if you don't like the social media or YouTube, which you should like YouTube, you can always give us a call. We have a phone number.
That's right. It's 1-833-STDWYTK. Leave a message at the sound of Ben's sweet, sweet voice. And you got 3 minutes. And after that 3 minutes, you're going to get cut off. So do your best to stick to that. If you want to go over and tell us something additional outside of the story, please do that via email, where you can reach us at
conspiracy@iheartradio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.